Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The game is on the line, and I've only got a shot clock's worth of time to tell you about Subway's $6.99 foot-long deal. That's right. Order now in the Subway app and get any footlong on the menu for just $6.99. Fresh sliced deli meat, fresh crispy veggies. Ugh, too much good stuff. Get it now on the Subway app. Any footlong for just $6.99. Use code 699FL now. Only here for a limited time. Redeemable at participating U.S. restaurants. Subway app, online orders only. Add-ons, additional plus tax. Additional fees apply on delivery. Excludes footlong snacks. Limited time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, March 10th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's get into it. Why don't we just jump right into the top 10 movies at the box office this past weekend?
Will do. I will preface up top by saying that it was not a good weekend, plain and simple. And, you know, that's kind of been the theme for most of this year, frankly. So, you know, we're already at March and, you know, a bunch of people in the industry and a bunch of box office analysts kept saying, wait until 2025. That's when the new normal will kick in. Things will be better. Things will be better. You know, I don't know what better looks like, but let's talk about it. So, coming in at number one this week was Mickey 17 from Warner Brothers and director Bong Joon-ho with a $19 million domestic opening. We will talk more about that in a moment. That is pretty much where the good news ends for that movie. Number two, we have Captain America Brave New World in its fourth weekend, dropping just 43% for $8.5 million. That's not bad, but for a Marvel movie, things are not looking great as it has made $370 million worldwide and is cooling off fast. It will probably finish, if I were to guess at this point, around $425 million worldwide. That's not great. And number three, we have something of a surprise. Last Breath, a thriller that sort of surprised from Focus Features last weekend, dropped just 47%, made $4.2 million. It is now sitting just shy of $15 million domestically. Not a big hit, but a bit of a surprise. Number four, we have The Monkey in its third weekend, Oz Perkins' latest Stephen King adaptation that had made $3.9 million, dropping just 39%. It has now made $31 million domestically and coming up on just past $45 million worldwide. So that's doing really well against a $10 million budget, one of the few bright spots right now. Number five, we have Paddington in Peru, which is still hanging in there with $3.8 million, dropping just 16% in its fourth weekend. It has now made $36.9 million domestically. Number six, we have Dog Man, another family-friendly picture with $3.5 million in its sixth weekend. That one dropped just 18%. So, you know, that one's not going to be the hit that Universal wanted, but it is holding really well. Number seven, we had Anora, which coming off of its best picture win, took in $1.8 million. You know, so not bad. Brought its domestic total to $18.3 million. Depending on if Neon keeps it in theaters, it might get past $20 million domestic. Number eight, we had Mufasa the Lion King, somehow still hanging in there in its 12th weekend with $1.7 million. It has passed $250 million domestically. At number nine, we had something called Rule Breakers from Angel Studios, with $1.5 million on over 2,000 screens in its first weekend for just over $700 per screen average, a disaster. And similarly, we have In the Lost Lands from director Paul W.S. Anderson of Resident Evil fame, adapting George R.R. Martin's story of the same name, that made just over $1 million on over 1,300 screens for an equally lousy $761 per screen average. A bad weekend indeed.
Whew, man. Okay, so I guess before we get into the specifics of any of these individual movies, I did want to kind of take the temperature and address some of the stuff you're talking about earlier. So last year, Ryan, we talked about how the narrative kind of shifted from, oh my God, this is terrible, to, hey, this year ended up being pretty okay. And I was wondering if you think this new normal that you alluded to earlier is that this pattern will just end up repeating itself over and over again, because typically you don't get a $1 billion hit in the first few months of a year. You have to wait for summer for something like that to roll around. And I think that was kind of the start of the tide turning, was something like Inside Out 2 being a massive hit and kind of getting people back to the theaters, maybe in ways that they weren't for the first half of last year. And then everything ended up being, yeah, like I said, kind of okay. So what do you make of all that?
I would counter with March for at least a handful of years before the pandemic, if not longer, was becoming like almost like this supplemental summer month where you had stuff like Batman v Superman, Captain America, Civil War, The Hunger Games, these massive, massive hits that would come out in March because the summer was just too overcrowded with hits. So you could get a gigantic hit in March, kind of timed around spring break. And that seems to be going away, and that takes a lot of money off the counter. You know, you're talking Captain America Civil War is a $1.1 billion movie. Batman v Superman, okay, not the hit Warner Brothers wanted, but did something like 860 worldwide, if memory serves. You know, The Hunger Games started a Lionsgate's biggest franchise to date by far. So, you know, those are the kind of movies I think you're missing. And I think, like, you know, any weekend in which you have, again, we'll get into the specifics more, but, you know, Mickey 17 topping the charts with $19 million led to another weekend where the total domestic box office failed to, basically made $54 million. You know, I mean, that's so up and down. So I'm with you. Yeah, maybe we get another Inside Out 2 later this year. You know, summer's slate looks promising, but, you know, the up and down there for theaters is rough. And, you know, again, when people were looking at the calendar of 2025, they're looking at Captain America Brave New World, hoping that could be Winter Soldier, and it's not. You know, so these studios are releasing fewer movies. They're moving them to VOD more quickly, and the franchises that used to prop everything up aren't what they used to be. So where does that leave us? I'm not sure. But it does leave us with more weekends like this where theaters are kind of looking at tumbleweeds in a lot of the screens they have.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking ahead to the rest of March, looking at something that could potentially even be, you know, in that billion-dollar club. And, like, I personally don't think this movie's going to do very well. I could be very wrong about that, but Snow White looks to be maybe the only thing that's a contender in the rest of March, you know? And so if you're looking for, like, something in this stretch of the calendar to potentially kick off that turnaround we were talking about, it seems like all hopes are now going to have to be pinned on that movie, which is, like, I don't know. After seeing that trailer, that's not a great place to be in. So
no, it's not. And I even look at, like, so yeah, you're right. March 21st is what you're looking at for Snow White. And then you also have a science fiction thriller called Ash coming out that same night, that same weekend. And Alto Nights, which is that long delayed Robert De Niro movie, I believe also from Warner Brothers, which apparently has an out of control budget and has been delayed forever. You know, that's not great. And I even looked at, like, you know, last weekend where you had almost nothing come out. But then you look at, like, March 14th, where you have Black Bag, the new David Koepp, Steven Soderbergh thriller. You have the Looney Tunes movie, The Day the Earth Blew Up, which has great reviews, but is getting little advertisement. And then you have Novocaine, the Jack Quaid thriller, all of those opening on the same day. So why is it that you have, like, these empty weekends, and then you have these weekends where you have these movies that are going to be fighting for their lives against each other? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't know. It gets frustrating when you look at it. And then you got, like, March 28th to round out the month. You got The Woman in the Yard, the new Blumhouse horror movie, and the Jason Statham action movie, A Working Man. do either of those break out? Can a working man be the beekeeper? Is Woman in the Yard, you know, the next Imaginary for Blumhouse, or is that the next, you know, Megan for Blumhouse? I don't know. And the cavern between those things is big. So it's tough sled.
Okay, so let's talk about Mickey 17. We went into this movie knowing that it had been delayed several times. I think it was supposed to come out in March of last year originally, and it got bumped basically a full year. And then we knew that the budget was pretty high on this one because Bong Joon-ho won Best Director and Best Picture for Parasite, and he was kind of in that position of like, basically give me whatever I want to make my next project. And what he wanted was $120 million of Warner Brothers money to make Mickey 17. BJ and I had a big discussion about that on Friday's episode of the show. That movie ended up not really working very well for me, but I don't know, $19 million, Ryan, opening weekend, like that's not great. So what do you think about that?
I think Warner Brothers, after what happened with what was dubbed Project Popcorn, the failed experiment where Warner Brothers tried to bring all their theatrical movies in 2021 to HBO Max, pissed off a bunch of filmmakers, all kinds of bad stuff happened, right? So like, you know, then Warner Brothers is like, no, we want to be filmmaker friendly. So what do? You go out, you give Bong Joon-ho a check, you give Paul Thomas Anderson a check, you give these guys, you sign Matt Reeves and M. Night Shyamalan to overall deals. Like, you try to make yourself filmmaker friendly, but that comes at a price. The price tag in this specific case was $118 million before marketing. That is cheaper than a Marvel movie. It is tremendously expensive for what is ostensibly an original movie. Yes, it is based on a book, but for audiences, this is not a franchise film. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I say original movie, I mean it's not a reboot of something familiar. It's not a sequel. It's just, it's a thing. And so this already rolled out overseas a couple of weeks ago in some territory. So it's done $34.2 million internationally. So right now it's over $53.2 million against a $118 million budget. Even if Warner Brothers was very conservative with the marketing, because as you alluded to, they were nervous about this movie. And I don't think they put as much into the marketing as they maybe could have. I think they were nervous. So let's say their total investment was $150 million. You're looking at and that's very conservative, your bare bones break-even point worldwide is $300 million. I would say it's probably closer to $350, if not closer to $400, if I were to guess. Your profitability theatrically is now a pipe dream. I don't know. I mean, it's not good for theaters. It's not good for, they originally wanted to dump this in January, and then I think they kicked it to March again. So I don't know. When you keep moving around the release date, when you're nervous about the movie, you overspent, you don't put the marketing, the reviews are good, but not great. I know BJ absolutely loved it, but you know, it's got like a 72% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's not going to get the job done for the average person. Those are wait to stream it numbers. Like if your movie ends up in the 70s on Rotten Tomatoes, unless you're a low budget horror movie, you are going to get the wait to stream it label. That's just how it's been going. So,
But like, it's hard to fault Warner Brothers in this situation, right? Because you've got director Bong, who is like this auteur voice, who is like a major, major player in international cinema, and seems like, it seems like it could have been just with a couple, maybe little tweaks in creative direction or like whatever it is. I'm not criticizing the decisions, but like looking at what this project seemed like on paper and coming off of the incredible high of Parasite, which was a historic thing that had never been done before, I feel like Warner Brothers made the right call here, and this particular gamble just didn't really work out the way that they wanted to, right? Like, that's kind of how we have to look at this, isn't it?
No. I hate to be that guy. I really do. I don't like being this person, and I don't like being the numbers guy in these situations. I don't like being Mr. Anti-Art, but like, $118 million never made sense for this movie. Never. It just didn't. And unless you're Christopher Nolan, you're not getting an original sci-fi movie up to the level of spending that, or the level of ticket sales that justifies that level of spending. Parasite was a resounding success, but it made just over $50 million domestically. That has to be somewhat qualified. Like, nothing that Bong Joon-ho has done commercially suggests he was going to be able to make this money back. And Same thing. Robert Pattinson has only been a movie star, a butts and seats movie star in Twilight and Batman. Part of the reason he took on Batman, I remember they was talking in this interview. He's like, I want to be in a movie someone actually goes and sees, you know, because all these other movies he was doing, these interesting movies, weren't making any money. So he's not a movie star unless he's in the right thing. I love him to death. I think he's a phenomenal actor, but there are only very few actors that get people in theaters just because they're in it. And he's not one of them. So I just don't think anything in this equation said this is a $118 million investment. $70 million? $65? Maybe. But that's where rationality has to kick in at some point. You have to say we have to mitigate risk. And spending $118 million on this was not mitigating risk. So I don't know. I know that that sucks. I know that that's the shitty way to look at it. I know that that's me seeming like you hate art and you hate movies. Not really. I want to see them continue to exist. Then if they keep losing money, they don't really, you know what I mean? Like I'm sort of fighting for the future of movies here.
Yeah, totally. Man, I really wish I could, we don't really get access or insight into what those conversations are actually like between, like, I would love to be a fly on the wall in the room where they figured out, you know, where Warner Brothers executives and Bong Joon-ho were in there hashing it out and figuring out what that number was going to be and what their expectations were in that exact moment. And because, you know, obviously, like, as it gets closer, you can do testing and tracking and all that kind of stuff, and the calculus changes pretty dramatically. But when, before anything exists, before even a script is done and the project is given a green light, I would just love to know what some of those conversations are like. So I don't know if we have anybody who is listening who has been in the room for anything like that. I mean, shoot us an email, bpearson@slashfilm.com. I'm just like genuinely interested in what that's like, because that's a part of Hollywood that we are typically not privy to. So,
yeah unfortunately really, we're not. And again, I'm saying all this just as a guy looking at the, you know, looking at the numbers as they come in. But, you know, I mean, I think that like I've done this enough now in the last handful of years where there are these certain data points that you look at and you go, this is relatively easy to predict. Like if your movie falls in that 70% Rotten Tomatoes range and it's not based on something people already care about and it's not a horror movie, the weight to stream is going to kick in. And, you know, your threshold for a non-franchise, non-sequel is low. You know, last year you look at It Ends With Us was the biggest non-franchise movie last year, $350 million worldwide. That was a sensation, but it was also very low budget. And then your biggest original movie last year was If, which didn't even quite clear $200 million worldwide, and it was like a $90 million budget. So, like, you know, these things just aren't working. Like, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what the answer is here, but I don't think the answer is $118 million, even if you are Bong Joon-ho. So I don't really have anything else to say right now, but it sucks. I know that much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take a break and then we'll come back and continue talking about the weekend's box office numbers.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, so Ryan, you mentioned a movie called In the Lost Lands, and I think a lot of our listeners would probably be forgiven for not even knowing that this movie exists. The only reason that I know it exists is because I received a couple of press releases about it, and it looks like Dave Bautista and who else is in this movie?
Mila Jovovich? Is that how you say
yes,
it? Is
yes.
it Jovovich? Yeah.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so this comes from Paul W.S. Anderson of Mortal Kombat fame. And is based on the short story of the same name by George R. R. Martin. Again, you got Dave Bautista in here. I mean, talk about ill-advised. This movie apparently has a $55 million budget. And it made just over $1 million this weekend. That is that's disastrous. You know, I mean, I guess I can see on paper where you go, we've got Dave Bautista, we've got the guy behind the Resident Evil franchise. Most of those movies made money. You've got George R. R. Martin's name attached in some way. Like, I can sort of see where on paper, a small studio, like Vertical Entertainment, who's handling in the United States, and Constantine Film in Germany, like, I can see where they sort of get excited about it, you know, with those things attached, but it just didn't work out. The marketing was so minimal for this, it felt like. I mean, clearly yeah. Vertical is praying this does gangbusters on VOD, or they maybe already have some, you know, backdoor deal with Netflix or something after the theatrical run. But like $55 million is nothing to sneeze at. And if you made $1 million on opening weekend, you know, your rate of decline there is, I mean, you're going to be lucky to clear $5 million domestically before this is done. So it's all VOD at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be like openly disrespectful, but it does look like a VOD movie. You know, like I'm frankly surprised that it got a theatrical release and somebody signed on to distribute it at all. But I mean, is that something that we should be praising? Because, you know, we always talk about like the idea of something getting a theatrical release and then going to streaming always makes the thing more popular once it gets to or PVOD or streaming or whatever, like it increases the popularity of the thing further down the line. Right. So like, I guess in theory, we should be happy that this movie is in theaters because it shows that people understand the way that that trajectory typically works. But I don't know, in this case, it just didn't work out.
Theoretically. Yeah. But I think that you still have to get to a certain level for that to kick in. You know what I mean? I think the only thing that might help this at all is that, you know, now you're going to get a lot of headlines like, you know, this movie bombed or whatever and blah, blah, blah. Like, so you're only going to get, you know, ink is going to be spilled on its behalf and not in a not great way. So that might make people, if it does end up on Netflix, let's say, like people will click out of curiosity, I guess I would say. I think VOD is going to be a tougher sell because people still have to shell out money for that. Mm. I'm with you in that, like, yes, in a lot of cases, I do advocate strongly for theatrical, but I still think you have to put the resources behind something for that to make any sense. And I think that, I don't know, maybe Vertical knew that they didn't exactly have a winner. So they, you know, they're a small company. They can't afford a $20 million marketing campaign if it's not going to pay off. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't really know, but someone spent $55 million on this thing and someone has to make $55 million back. I'm sure it was a piecemeal deal where they got a bunch of different investors. But, you know, I guess my bigger concern here is that, you know, there you have, you know, big stars, a director who maybe doesn't make great movies, but has a commercial history and, you know, George R. R. Martin's name attached and it can't even get to $2 million. Like, you know, that's another just like, it's another rough city. I'm not saying I haven't seen the movie, but the reviews are clearly not very good. So, you know, I don't know. It's just another one of those like yikes, you know, sort of things on a weekend
yeah.
like this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, any other movies that you wanted to dig in a little deeper in the top 10 or beyond?
The only thing I would point out is that there were another couple of new releases this weekend. There was a small animated movie called Night of the Zoopocalypse that opened. I think it was like a little like PG kid-friendly horror type movie that made like less than $1 million. And then you had a movie called The Rule of Jenny Penn, which comes from IFC Films. I saw this at Fantastic Fest last year. I actually liked it quite a bit. It will be going to Shudder. That made just $263,000 on 878 screens. So that made like nothing. You know, so, I mean, it's just, you know, again, you're looking, not that it's, I think what bums me out is it's not that nobody tried this weekend. It's just that nothing caught on even a little bit. You know, so it's, yeah, just, it's one of those weekends where I scratch my head and I go, of course things are going to get better. By the time April, May gets here, we're going to be talking about things that have made money. But, you know, I'm worried that that 2023 number of $9 billion domestically might sort of be the new ceiling for the domestic box office. You sort of maybe keeping up with inflation, and that's really not what anyone was hoping for. So, you know, we'll see how it shakes out, but that's my concern.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, maybe this is the subject of like another episode or something, but like, if that is true, if that holds true, what does that mean for the industry as a whole? What kind of knockdown effects would that have if we discover that there actually is that ceiling and it's that number and it's not going to be a growth business forever? You know, like, there's that sort of Wall Streetification mentality of like everything has to be on an upward trajectory all the time. Does not apply to an art form like this. You can't bank on things like that. So that's always been true. But I think, you know, when you have movies like Endgame and all the movies that came out in 2019 contributing to this gigantic year, I think that puts dollar signs in people's eyes. And then when that doesn't happen year after year after year after year, again and again and again and again, what kind of implications does that have for Hollywood moving forward? I don't know if you have any like quick thoughts on that, but
I think right now, you know, AMC Theaters is still in a lot of debt. You know, Regal Cinemas is going through a bankruptcy from a couple of years ago. If that $9 billion number domestically is kind of the new normal, then those chains are going to immediately have to adjust their business model to that. And I don't know what that looks like. And I don't think it's particularly good, because I think they've been sort of holding out hope that, okay, we're, you know, the strikes were bad last year. That affects it. Let's hope that things will get better and get bigger. Who knows? You know, maybe it gets to $10 billion, maybe whatever. But I still don't think that that's. I just don't think that that's what anyone was hoping for, you know. And so I don't know what that means for AMC and its big mountain of debt. I don't know what that means for any of those theater chains that were sort of really praying that things would get better. I just think it means that the business is going to have to really adjust, and I think it does mean that, you know, those businesses are going to have to diversify a little more. I wrote a piece for us coming out of South by Southwest this week about, you know, a lot of these chains, these smaller regional chains, are turning into like family entertainment centers where they have like bowling and axe throwing and also movies, you know, and like, and so movies are just sort of a part of it, for better or worse. And I think that's probably going to end up being more of the future, rather than just a multiplex, would be my guess.
I mean, that doesn't sound terrible though, does it? I mean,
I don't know how great it is for the cinematic experience. Like, I don't know if you've ever gone to see like a movie at like an Evo Entertainment Center where, like, you know, there's a bunch of kids there that like were playing in the arcade and their parents bought them a movie ticket and they're running up and down the aisles with popcorn. Cause I literally had that happen last year while watching Long Legs. But like, you know, it's like, if it keeps the lights on, you know, I don't know. It's kind of give and take. Right. But.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about pretty much everything we talked about at slashfilm.com. I'll try to link to a couple things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly!